Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Time to take a look at the weather and climate with our guests. I know at least all my friends have complained a bit about the snowy and the kind of cold we've had in the month of April here in southern Wisconsin. And northern Wisconsin has been all snow, I think, and cold, which was not great for the month of April, at least as far as I'm concerned. But maybe Steve Ackerman, he was one of our weather guys. He's back right now. John Martin will join us later. Steve Ackerman is Vice Chancellor for Research and Graduate Education at UW-Madison. And then, as I mentioned a little later in the show, John Martin will join us. He's professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And, of course, Steve is a faculty member within that department as well. So I hope you'll join in with your questions. You remember a big April snowstorm? What trends have you noticed in Wisconsin weather? Maybe you've got a photo, a weather photo you want to share with us. We'd love to have those as well. You can join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Steve Ackerman, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to have you talking with me, Larry. It's yeah, April's been kind of cool, but wasn't Saturday beautiful for most of the state?
Yes, it was.
It was warm, but yeah, April's been generally cool. Even the maximum daytime temperature throughout the state has been somewhere between 4 and 8 degrees below normal. So yeah, April's been cool, but you know, it's Wisconsin, right? That's what I keep saying.
So we just finished talking about the Leonardo da Vinci exhibit that's going on now in Appleton at the museum there at the castle. And I was kind of looking back and thinking, you know, da Vinci was actually the first meteorologist or considered to be one of the first meteorologists.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not surprising, I think, in many artists. You know, they really need to make very careful observations in order to do their artwork. And so I think Da Vinci was, as you know, the caller you had on, it was a very fascinating discussion, by the way, and I'm going to get up to that museum too to see that. But yeah, he was a scientist. He viewed, you know, tried to figure out how things work. And as part of that, he was a very careful observer of the weather, and I believe also of the tides. So I think he was also beginning to make those connections to the tides and the moon and things like that.
I know he was the first to identify hurricanes. What he depicted would be kind of discovered by meteorologists in the 1970s, and this was him back in 1480 or so, which I think in the 70s it was then defined as the vortex flow patterns.
Vortex flow patterns. Oh, and, you know, and he was in Florence, right? So
yeah.
I don't imagine that area gets very many hurricanes, although they do get some really nasty storms in the Mediterranean. So maybe that's what he's basing them on.
I think he invented the hygrometer to measure humidity.
Humidity, right? Yeah.
He had some beeswax, which wouldn't take humidity. And then he had some cotton of some sort. And he had a kind of a scale, and he'd have dry cotton on one side and the beeswax on the other, and then when the humidity went up, the water would soak into
the cotton and change the scale,
and it would tip the scale a little more toward the cotton side, and then he had a way to measure the amount.
That's phenomenal. That's what they call a Renaissance man, right? Who can do everything.
A nanometer, too. He figured that out, too. So just an amazing guy. Well, anyway.
And he tried to fly, right?
I mean, he tried to fly, and he invented the parachute.
And wasn't he looking at submarines as well?
Yeah.
Or going underwater?
Yes, he was. So amazing guy. So let's get back to April here. Is it our imagination that it's been colder than usual this month?
No, it's definitely been colder this month, both in the mean April temperature as well as the maximum. And the minimum has also been below normal, but I think it's the maximum temperature that was below normal by 6-7 degrees throughout most of the state that really catches people's attention, right? Because at night we're sleeping, so we're not outside, many of us. But when we go outside and we're thinking April, we're thinking April going into May, we're into springtime now, but it's certainly been a below normal temperature.
June in Northwoods called to say this winter had so much wind. Seems like 6 out of 7 days were gusty.
Yeah, and I don't have the stats on whether or not it's been a windier month than normal, but down here in southern Wisconsin, yesterday, boy, that wind was huge. It blew backyard chairs right off the property into the marshland right next to us. Right? And it was just crazy wind all day long.
It'd be interesting to know if it's windier than normal. It does seem to be windier. March and April are usually windy, are they not?
March is our windiest month, actually. And I remember looking at that in early March, end of February, and it did seem like it was getting windier than comparison to previous years. Dawn, I haven't looked at it for April. What it looked like for April.
Dawn in Madison emailed that a couple of months ago on the program. She remembers hearing that this year was going to be a wetter year. Is that still the case here in Madison or even southern Wisconsin?
It has not been the case for southern Wisconsin. Precipitation is... for the last month in particular, has been below normal throughout most of the state, except right around Lake Superior. They've been above normal by about 50% of normal. But for most of this southern part of the state and much of the Midwest has been below normal.
We have gotten some rains in southern Wisconsin couple of weeks, and they're really welcome because we were several inches below.
Yeah, we were really low, and you're right. Starting in April, really, we really started getting precipitation in the area. The snowfall, I know, up into January or so was really below normal. We just didn't have much snowfall, although I think we're starting to catch up now in snowfall overall.
Teddy in Barnes has something for us. Hi, Teddy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. How you doing? You want to go ice skating on the Upper Eau Claire?
That sounds like fun.
there's 12 inches of ice out in the middle yet on the upper, and then there's about 15 on Lake Owen. I was caretaking out there for a good friend, Tom Johnson. So there is a ton of ice out there everywhere yet up here.
Wow.
Just crazy.
So is ice fishing still open then? People are out there in shacks?
Oh, yeah. They're, panfish and crappies and that, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, in fact, this weekend I saw some side-by-sides out there. So it's just nuts yet, yeah.
Well. Thanks for the update, yeah. Teddy. I have with some friends of mine, and I have a cabin in the town of Barnes, and so that's a good hike to the northern part of the state. There, and we're sort of on the edge of the Shawamigan National Forest there in the town of Barnes, and almost to the top of the state, to be perfectly honest. So it's plenty of ice there, from the sound of it. Mike in Minocqua. Your turn. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
We split our time between Chicago and Minocqua. And what I find, you were asking about trends, what I find is that everything has shifted further. Like September is very warm. Christmas time, and really don't get much snow and ice until after New Year's. And then it's in April, and we're still waiting for it to get warm. So that's the trend I've noticed, is that, you know, things seem to be moving in. I used to think that summer was June, July, and August, and then fall would be September, October, November. But everything seems to have shifted forward. Is that a trend that they've seen elsewhere or in the Midwest?
Yeah, you know, that's a good observation. I don't know about a trend, you know, in terms of multi-year trend, but, you know, I do remember in December of this past year, it was a really warm December through most of the Midwest. In Wisconsin, we were 5 degrees up to 7 or 8 degrees in southern Wisconsin above normal for the temperatures. So December was really warm. And now you're right, in April, we're now 4, 5, 6 degrees below normal in terms of temperature. So yeah, that's certainly been the case for this year. I don't know about the overall trend though. We'll have to take a look at whether or not, you know, we are in an overall trend in the wintertime and in the springtime of a warming over the last 100 years, but what that's been looking like for the last five or 10 years, I'm not sure.
Mm. Mike, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You're spending your time in a real nice part of the state there, Minocqua. I love that area of the state for sure. In the middle of the month, we had some storms that were, I think, an example of shallow convection as opposed to the deep convection of the summertime thunderstorms. Explain what those two weather terms mean, the shallow and deep convection.
Yeah, so deep convection is, you know, the kind of storms we get during the summer, the thunderstorms, the really nasty lightning, heavy rain, and that kind of activity, which really requires a very unstable atmosphere. A couple of weeks ago, in mid-April, so maybe 2 weeks ago, we did have a snow squall kind of move throughout most of the southern and mid regions of Wisconsin. It was just a real intense flurry of snowfall. And it was very convective, but it was very shallow convective. So it wasn't maintained for a long period of time. It just kind of moved through the area, caught everybody's attention. Where did the snow come from? And then it went by as the snow squall, which is just a line of convection, just moved through the area. And it's shallow in the sense that it doesn't get as deep as the thunderstorms do. Vertically deep.
And you get these snow pellets or grapple.
And you can get the grapple, as well. And they're like soft hail. You can pick them up and they just break, but they're not like the, you know, the classic six-sided snowflakes that we often see.
Yeah, that's for sure. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you as we move along today on the show. And grapple, I mentioned grapple. It's, what is it? What's the term for it? What does it look like?
It sort of looks like a small soft pellet of snow, sometimes like a, like maybe shaped like a three-dimensional piece of a corn, a corn nibble, whatever you call that comes off of a corn on the cob.
Niblet.
Niblet kind of thing, yeah, right, yeah.
There we go.
And they're soft, it's not hail. Hail is like a solid sphere. So if you try and break a hailstone, you won't be able to do that. But the grapple, you can pick it up and break it off in your fingers.
Well, we got Frank and Jay joining us. Frank from La Crosse, Jay from Two Rivers. What about you? You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Steve Ackerman with us right now, Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison and a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. John Martin will be joining us right after our news break. John, Professor, former chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. give a call, hang on, and we'll be back right after this quick look at the news, and we'll find out also what's in store for us through the afternoon on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. The weather guys are back with us here today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. John Martin joining us now, a professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. John, good to see your face.
Yeah, good to see you, Larry. Great to be back.
Steve Ackerman, of course, he's been with us for the past 15 minutes or 20 minutes or so, a vice chancellor for research and graduate education at UW-Madison, and always fun to have him with us, too. And fun to have you listening in. What questions do you have for them? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Frank in La Crosse, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Always enjoy listening to the two weather experts because we always love the weather. I wanted to get comments from them regarding climate change and climate denial and recommend this two-part frontline special on the power of oil this week and last regarding how much money in politics has been spent in the climate denial aspect, and wondered what the take was from the two experts regarding what we can do to counter how much effort's been put into climate denial. And I was surprised to see that two of the biggest climate deniers had ties to the University of Wisconsin. One, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, got his chemical engineering degree from Madison. And the other is a member of the University of Virginia faculty now, and got his weather degree from Madison, many years ago, and has been a strong denier and publicist for the Cato Institute. So just wondered what the take was on both on that connection to Madison, our great institution, and then just what we can do here to deal with it and recommend those shows.
John, let's turn to you since you're just in.
Okay.
I think one thing that the last point is a really good one, the idea that, at a place like University of Wisconsin, you can end up nurturing minds that will end up having a contrary view on important issues, kind of proves that the whole idea by some in our state, especially in our state government, that we're just an indoctrination camp is complete bunk. It's untrue. It's clear that that's not the case. However, at the same time, people who are walking a plank on being climate denialists are definitely in the minority. And being in the minority doesn't necessarily vest your ideas with any more power. They have to still compete against the influx of observations and the background of theory and the notion that you have to make sense out of all of that in order to come to a conclusion. So my sense is that people who are climate change deniers are cherry picking evidence. There's just no doubt about it at this point in our understanding of the system, which is not complete, but we know foundationally there's no question whatsoever that human beings' use of fossil fuels, and by doing so, increasing the carbon dioxide content primarily of the atmosphere into ranges that we haven't seen in the last million or more years, is undeniably at the root of the global change that's occurring. Talk to people in the plains of Colorado right now who are fighting fires to keep their homes. They don't do that in April, usually. These are the things that were predicted by people who have been thinking about how the climate's going to change and what the manifestations are going to be, and they're now happening. No one is predicting global cooling. No one has in the last 15 to 20 years, and there are no indications at all that it's occurring. And so the notion that one would deny climate is crazy. It's as crazy as the notion that the University of Wisconsin is an indoctrination camp. So we can learn two things from that.
Steve, anything to add there?
The only thing I'll add to that, I agree with John 100%. He says it all very well. The positive aspect is that I think is that in the 1990s, the climate deniers, it was just so hard to work against that. Whereas I think nowadays the climate deniers are much fewer in numbers, and more of the public recognizes that this is an issue that they're dealing with, as John pointed out, right now.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that it's taken this long But I think that's the upside, is that knowledge is finally getting out there and the climate deniers are getting fewer and fewer.
Frank, thank you again. Jay in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Jay.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Gents, what has the trend been, say, in the last 60 years regarding average and peak wind speeds? If my memory is accurate, when I was in grade school, we would wish for windy days so that we could go fly a kite. And in the last 10 to 20 years, it seems to have gotten consistently windier with higher wind speeds. Like another caller mentioned, it seemed like it was windy 6 out of 7 days, and that's not exaggerating for some weeks. And we have had for the last 20 years the Kites Over Lake Michigan weekend festival every summer. And sometimes either the wind has been too intense, or on that very infrequent day that there isn't any wind, it often happens on that same weekend.
So what do you think?
So, you know, actually, we looked at this back in March, and for Madison and Sullivan and Green Bay, the actual average wind speed for the month has been decreasing over the last 100 years. So by month on average, usually March is the windiest month, followed by April, if I remember that right. But otherwise, we've actually been seeing a decrease in the average wind speed throughout most of the state. I think that wasn't quite the case for La Crosse. I think it might have been increasing a little bit or remaining relatively flat.
Yeah, I remember you doing that, Steve, and I was going to ask you about it today because I got an inquiry from an old friend of mine about the exact same question. And my sense was that that's what your analysis had revealed, that the wind speeds were decreasing just about everywhere. And I think you're right that La Crosse was the exception. And we were talking about it. It might be moving the site. And they have bluffs near the airport and stuff like that that could have been a factor over some part of that record. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Jay, thanks for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jim in Cedarburg did email, and he wonders if you could suggest a website that details a city's weather climate history. For example, the number of serious weather events seasonally, such as tornadoes. Is there a place to go to get to the city level? That might be difficult.
Depends on what city. The National Weather Service has really done an excellent new job on its climate, on its local climate data, so that you can go, for instance, in Madison. I think quite a number of the larger cities in the southern part of the state have such records at the Milwaukee Weather Service page. If you go to the NWS MKE on your search engine, the first thing will come up is the National Weather Service office at Milwaukee. And then along their heading on their front page, go to local climatology. And then the first subheading there is local. And that will give you an opportunity to look at all kinds of different data, but mostly from the Milwaukee, southern Wisconsin area. If you want Green Bay and the lakes, you got to go to Green Bay. If you want La Crosse and Duluth and so on, you can go to all those different stations and you can probably find something close to the city you're interested in. But there's really great records. You can look at the first time the temperature is over 80 back to 1870 in Madison, you know, for seasons. All sorts of somewhat obscure things are available on this really well-done, redone website that the Weather Service puts out. So that's one that comes to mind. I don't know, Steve, you might know another one.
No, the only one I wonder about, and you know, the smaller cities that don't have, you know, the official National Weather Service type observations, the records in the city might actually have records historically from farmers. You know,
oh yeah,
100 years or so, made very careful measurements.
Right.
Kind of along with that, Greg emailed to ask if there are any good sources of online wind maps. And any particular states of area or areas that typically provide interesting wind patterns.
So there, you know, when I did that study back in March, we got that data from the State Climate Office here in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, Ed Hopkins, really helped put that together. The map that I'm thinking of that Greg raised is, and I think, you know, it's some commercial weather organizations have these flow chart maps.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
They show you where it's flowing and where
streamline or something.
Streamlines.
Yeah.
And those are really fun to watch.
Yeah. There are other commercial websites that take output from the National Meteorological Center forecast models and will portray 10-meter winds. That's the one you want to look for, is the 10-meter wind and as a variable. One that I can think of off the top of my head is Tropical Tidbits, it's called, tropicaltidbits.com. And they'll, one of the things that you can portray there is the 10-meter wind speed. It's contoured. It's not, like Steve says, it's not animated on this page. But in some instances, that's even easier to follow. You can kind of see where the wind is forecasted to be over 20 knots or something like that. But there's probably more than those that are out there, because the way to portray this stuff has just become so easy, and then everybody competes about the best portrayal, which is great for us because there's lots of good things to choose from.
John Martin, Steve Ackerman, our guests. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. And John, you've been taking a look at April snow history.
Yeah.
In the Madison area. What are you finding?
Well, it's really interesting. I've gone all the way back to 1950 because there was a move of the station from one place to another. And I think the late 40s, the observations were somewhat compromised, at least in the data set I looked at. So I stopped my analysis at 1950, but that's 72 years. And I found that the average number of days in April where snow is in the air, so that could be a trace or a flurry or something accumulating, is about 4.5. And we've had 6 this year, so we're a little bit above the average. And if you break it down into decades, the decadal average has really been steady. I mean, from one decade to the next. 1950s were an exception because I think 1950 itself had 13 days out of the 30 in April with snow. So that was by far the record of all time in those 72 years. And this is the other thing that struck me as really interesting, was that the only year in that 72-year period where an April occurred with no snow in it at all was April 1981 here in Madison. That's it.
Wow.
That's the only time. I would never have guessed that going in. Isn't that wild?
Did you look at it by, first half of the month or second half of the month? Or
no, it wouldn't be hard to do that, but I didn't on my first cut, so no. I hate to give my impression, but I think my impression is that it's almost uniformly distributed through about the 20th. Then events past the 20th are relatively rare. Though we did have, I think, a 7-inch snowfall on April 30th of 1973, the last day of April. Oh, my God, that's brutal.
And we have, but we've also had snow in May.
Yes, we have. Yeah. Yep, we have indeed. I haven't looked at the whole month of May. I'm going to guess that the number of May days in snow is about half what it is in April, probably even less than that on the average, because those events occur, but they're probably more rare than the ones in April.
And they're probably earlier in the month too.
Yeah. I'm sure they're biased through the first 2 weeks of May. I'm sure that's right, Larry. Yeah.
Have you seen any stats on the winter season in Wisconsin yet, or how it shaped up?
We barely got to 30 inches of accumulated snow, and that's 20 inches below normal. And coming after a dry fall. I can't remember now if the summer was pretty dry too, but the fall was exceptionally dry. So that's really bad news for the spring plant, because there's not a lot of water in the topsoil, and the subsoil maybe isn't even saturated. So that can be a problem if we don't supplant it. Now, the last couple of weeks, we've had a pretty good collection of storms come through. We had almost an inch of rain on Thursday, which was good, or actually more than an inch. And then a little more on Saturday night. So if we get it in these drips and drabs and the occasional 1 inch from here until mid to late May, we'll be probably okay. But it's a little tenuous right now, given all those circumstances.
I like that inch that fell, that just fell, because it was, it wasn't a torrent. It just kind of kept coming, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Nice, steady, prolonged rain.
Nice, steady, prolonged rain. Jamie in Algoma, let's go to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was speaking recently with an engineer who, when he looks at anything, he looks extremely thoroughly at it. And he was thinking about climate change, and he said, well, we haven't taken all the variables into consideration. And he was talking about with more moisture being in the atmosphere, that's going to create more cloud cover, and the white tops of the clouds are going to reflect some of that heat back into the atmosphere. What do you think of that argument?
Yeah, it's definitely a feedback that is a possibility. But the status of a climate models and the status of thinking that underlies the climate model certainly takes that into account. And the models themselves are getting increasingly skillful at cloud production and cloud prediction. And I think that's probably how that's going to work out. But your friend's exactly right. That's one of the interplays. You put more water vapor in the atmosphere, you do run the risk of having more cloudiness. And that would dampen the incoming solar radiation as much as the increased water vapor would act to retain more of the infrared that would otherwise escape. So it's definitely a feedback.
But again, that's taken into account in when they're making these forecasts, right?
Yeah, and for someone to suggest that it isn't, whether it was done by mistake or just without knowledge of the fact that the modelers and the theorists know that, is not correct. So it's not as if it's an unaccounted for variable. It's not a new discovery, but it's one that is problematic in the models. There's no question about it. That's one of the spots. Clouds, and Steve knows better than me, clouds and aerosols are a really big deal.
Jamie, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. What about forecasts for warm getting to normal temperatures? Well, or maybe we're at normal.
I don't think it's happening in the coming week. We're going to stay cool again, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a cool week. I mean, we might not see 50 until Friday. It's really just going to be cool and pretty chilly. Now, in my book, this is exactly what I want the last 2 weeks of the term. I don't want any weather distracting me from getting to the finish line. And if I'm 20 years old and I'm a junior or a sophomore in college, I definitely want nothing to distract me for the next 2 weeks. So I don't want to hear any complaints about this weather. I think it's perfect.
And for those who aren't in the know, well, see, my last class day of teaching is May 5th. That's my last day. So the semester is over. For the UW-Madison in the first week of May, end of the first week of May is the end of it for the term. So there you go.
After that, we can release the Furies. That's fine.
Yeah. Roger in Grantsburg. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Say, my question was for your guest there, is what is the standards for the your wind speed for generation for the big wind generators, what is the average wind speed, what does it take, what for sustainable electricity,
So how much wind you look at those propellers and they're so big, you'd think that it would take a lot of wind to get them moving.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know what the minimum wind is. I'm going to guess that it's pretty small.
I mean, I think you're right.
They design it so that in the light winds, they really start generating energy. I think the real, more serious problem is the high winds.
Yeah.
That can really bend it and cause damage to the windmills there.
Yeah, that's my impression too, Steve. Right on. The reason why the blades are so long is it catches more wind. So they're designed to perform under light and moderate winds, and they do have to shut them down in heavy winds because they can't trust that it's going to not be damaged.
And they always look like they're moving slowly, but they're not really, are they?
They're moving fast. Yeah.
They're moving a lot faster than they look, for sure. Roger, thanks. Brian in Milwaukee, what's on your mind?
Hello, I was just wondering, how many traces equal an inch of snow I plow for a municipality? And they always say a trace. I just wanted to know how much does it accumulate.
What is a trace? Yeah.
A trace is a statement of the fact that it precipitated, but it did not measure. So an infinity of traces doesn't even equal an inch. That's it. And if it gets to be more than a trace, the next characteristic measurement is a 1/100th of an inch. So.
Oh. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So, John, do they keep records of the number of days that there was a trace of precipitation?
Yeah, in fact, that's what I'm referring to for the April snow days. Any day that had a trace of snow is counted as an April snow day. And so this is where it maybe makes more sense to most people, I think, and myself included, that when you get a trace, it could really just mean you had a flurry. Somebody saw it snowing, and that counts, but it didn't measure anywhere. And then if you're in your at the Weather Service offices, of course, they have a snowboard, and even a few flurries won't be measurable, so they'll call it a trace. They have to say that it snowed, but not until you get an accumulation that you can measure at a hundredth of an inch do you have to call it measurable.
So
interesting.
Very. And so what's a hundredth of an inch? What's the term for that?
Just the first measurable increment that I'm aware of.
Okay. So you go from a trace to the first measurable increment, and so you need 100 of those to get to an inch.
Yeah, and I think it might be a hundredth of an inch of liquid equivalent. So it might be a tenth of an inch of snow or something, depending on what the ratio is. I'm not sure exactly what they do to call it measurable snow, but I've never seen a snow amount of less than 0.1 inches. I've never seen that reported. So maybe that is the threshold.
I like that phrase of an infinite trace is zero.
Yeah. Yep. Zeno liked the snow.
Something interesting about that mathematically.
Yeah.
Well, there's not a trace of time left on the show either.
You're an infinite amount.
And yet we've been here forever. Right.
Guys, thanks a lot for coming by again. We'll look forward to your visit the last Monday in May. My goodness. Things will be different then. Thanks again.
We hope.
Yeah. We'll have a trace or something.
John Martin and Steve Ackerman, our guests. John, professor, former chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. Steve, also a faculty member, but too, he's the vice chancellor for research and graduate education at UW-Madison. They'll be back, and we will talk with them again the last Monday in May. Tomorrow at 11, George Malara is back to help you with your dog training questions and your dog's behavior problems, so look forward to that. But in the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.